Chapter 21. Coaxing tone. And she's so hungry, sweet little lady. Here, my dear, try if you can eat a bit of this, said the younger woman, handing some of the stew on a brown dish with an iron spoon to Maggie, who, remembering that the old woman had seemed angry with her for not liking the bread and bacon, dared not refuse the stew, though fear had chased away her appetite. If her father would but come by in the gig, and take her up. Or even if Jack the Giant Killer, or Mr. Greatheart, or St. George who slew the dragon on the halfpennies, would happen to pass that way. But Maggie thought with a sinking heart that these heroes were never seen in the neighborhood of St. Ogg's. Nothing very wonderful ever came there. Maggie Tulliver, you perceive, was by no means that well-trained, well-informed young person that a small female of 8 or 9 necessarily is in these days, as he had only been to school a year at St. Ogg's, and had so few books that she sometimes read the dictionary, so that in traveling over her small mind you would have found the most unexpected ignorance as well as unexpected knowledge. She could have informed you that there was such a word as polygamy, and being also acquainted with polysyllable, as he had deduced the conclusion that holy mean any. But as he had no idea that gypsies were not well supplied with groceries, and her thoughts generally were the oddest mixture of clear-eyed acumen and blind dreams. Her ideas about the gypsies had undergone a rapid modification in the last 5 minutes. From having considered them very respectful companions, amenable to instruction, as he had begun to think that they meant perhaps to kill her as soon as it was dark, and cut up her body for gradual cooking, the suspicion crossed her that the fierce-eyed old man was in fact the devil, who might drop that transparent disguise at any moment, and turn either into the grinning blacksmith, or else a fiery-eyed monster with dragon's wings. It was no use trying to eat the stew, and yet the thing she most dreaded was to offend the gypsies by betraying her extremely unfavorable opinion of them, and she wondered, with a keenness of interest that no theologian could have exceeded, whether, if the devil were really present, he would know her thoughts. What, you don't like the smell of it, my dear, said the young woman, observing that Maggie did not even take a spoonful of the stew. Tea try a bit, come. No, thank you, said Maggie, summoning all her force for a desperate effort, and trying to smile in a friendly way. I haven't time, I think. It seems getting darker. I think I must go home now, and come again another day, and then I can bring you a basket with some jam tarts and things. Maggie rose from her seat as she threw out this illusory prospect, devoutly hoping that Apollyon was gullible. But her hope sank when the old gypsy woman said, stop a bit, little lady. We'll take you home, all safe. When we've done supper, you shall ride home, like a lady. Maggie sat down again, with little faith in this promise, though she presently saw the tall girl putting a bridle on the donkey, and throwing a couple of bags on his back. Now then, little Miss Sis, said the younger man, rising, and leading the donkey forward, tell us where you live. What's the name of the place? Dorlcote Mill is my home, said Maggie, eagerly. My father is Mr. Tulliver. He lives there. What? A big mill a little way this side o' St. Ogg's? Yes, said Maggie. Is it far off? I think I should like to walk there, if you please. No, it'll be getting dark, we must make haste. And the donkey'll carry you as nice as can be, you'll see. He lifted Maggie as he spoke, and set her on the donkey. She felt relieved that it was not the old man who seemed to be going with her, but as he had only a trembling hope that she was really going home. Here's your pretty bonnet, said the younger woman, putting that recently despised, but now welcome article of costume on Maggie's head. And you'll say we've been very good to you, won't you? And what a nice little lady we said you was. Oh yes, thank you, said Maggie, I'm very much obliged to you. But I wish you'd go with me too. She thought anything was better than going with one of the dreadful men alone. It would be more cheerful to be murdered by a larger party. Ah, your father stole me, aren't you? Said the woman. But I can't go, you will go too fast for me. It now appeared that the man also was to be seated on the donkey, holding Maggie before him, and she was as incapable of remonstrating against this arrangement as the donkey himself, though no nightmare had ever seemed to her more horrible. When the woman had patted her on the back and said goodbye, the donkey, at a strong hint from the man's stick, set off at a rapid walk along the lane toward the point Maggie had come from an hour ago, while the tall girl and the rough urchin, also furnished with sticks, obligingly escorted them for the first 100 yards, with much screaming and thwacking. Not Leonor, in that preternatural midnight excursion with her phantom lover, was more terrified than poor Maggie in this entirely natural ride on a short-paced donkey, with a gypsy behind her, who considered that he was earning half a crown. The red light of the setting sun seemed to have a portentous meaning, with which the alarming bray of the second donkey with the log on its foot must surely have some connection. Two low-thatched cottages, the only houses they passed in this lane, seemed to add to its dreariness. They had no windows to speak of, and the doors were closed. It was probable that they were inhabited by witches, and it was a relief to find that the donkey did not stop there. At last, oh, sight of joy! This lane, the longest in the world, was coming to an end, was opening on a broad high road, where there was actually a coach passing. And there was a finger post at the corner, as he had surely seen that finger post before, oh St. Ogg's, 2 miles. The gypsy really meant to take her home then. He was probably a good man, after all, and might have been rather hurt at the thought that she didn't like coming with him alone. This idea became stronger as she felt more and more certain that she knew the road quite well, and she was considering how she might open a conversation with the injured gypsy, and not only gratify his feelings, but efface the impression of her cowardice, when, as they reached a crossroad, Maggie caught sight of someone coming on a white-faced horse. Oh, stop, stop, she cried out. There's my father. Oh, father, father. The sudden joy was almost painful, and before her father reached her, she was sobbing. Great was Mr. Tulliver's wonder, for he had made a round from Bassett, and had not yet been home. Why, what's the meaning of this? He said, checking his horse, while Maggie slipped from the donkey, and ran to her father's stirrup. The little miss lost herself, I reckon, said the gypsy. As she'd come to our tent at the far end o' Dunlow Lane, and I was bringing her where she said her home was. It's a good way to come after being on the tramp all day. Oh yes, father, he's been very good to bring me home, said Maggie, very kind, good man. Here then, my man, said Mr. Tulliver, taking out 5 shillings. It's the best day's work you ever did. I couldn't afford to lose the little wench. Here, lift her up before me. Why, Maggie, how's this, how's this? He said, as they rode along, while she laid her head against her father and sobbed. How came you to be rambling about and lose yourself? Oh, father, sobbed Maggie, I ran away, because I was so unhappy. Tom was so angry with me. I couldn't bear it. Pooh. Pooh, said Mr. Tulliver, soothingly, you mustn't think o' running away from father. What 'ud father do without his little wench? Oh no, I never will again, father never. Mr. Tulliver spoke his mind very strongly when he reached home that evening, and the effect was seen in the remarkable fact that Maggie never heard one reproach from her mother, or one taunt from Tom, about this foolish business of her running away to the gypsies. Maggie was rather awe-stricken by this unusual treatment, and sometimes thought that her conduct had been too wicked to be alluded to. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.